animals on WMNF. Good morning, Caleb.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Great. Well, first, congratulations on the book. I mean, right off the bat, what's it like being a 16-year-old who's published a book?
Well, it's been a really fun journey, just going out and doing lots of Zoom calls because with COVID, everything has been virtually.
Yeah.
But it's been this stellar journey and meeting new people and just these amazing connections. And I'm just excited to see where it takes me.
I'm sure. And now the book's been out, I guess, about 6 weeks now. What kind of reaction have you been getting?
It's been really positive, seeing a lot of people that it's making an impact, just hearing about the story, and it's focusing a lot on the kindness, us getting lots of good reviews, it's focusing a lot. It's very inspiring to a lot of readers. It seems to be just something that they can read and kind of just escape something.
And closer to home, what's been the reaction like amongst your friends and neighbors, classmates, teachers? What have they been telling you? How have they been reacting?
A lot of my friends have different pieces of the story, and they were impacted in different moments. So it's been really fun to see the reaction of the whole story.
Yeah.
Because not one family experienced all of it. So seeing just like the lead up for families that were more on the back half of the story. So it's been really interesting to see just the full story. And it's been really fun to see all of my friends and family and everybody make these, just talk together.
Yeah.
And to find these conversation starters has been really amazing.
I'm guessing those friends are pretty accustomed to you having big successes, kind of like, oh, what amazing thing has Caleb done now, right? Isn't that kind of, in some ways, with all the stuff you've done before the book, almost inevitably partly the response?
So they're very pleased about the success of the rabbits and the success of the book.
Yeah.
And they're on this journey with me, too. So
yeah.
we're really enjoying this wave.
That's cool. And what about your teachers? I mean, what have they been saying about, hey, Caleb has a book out?
Well, because of COVID, I've been virtual. So I have not told any of my teachers in person yet. They did, the superintendent did an e-blast of the release of it. But I haven't been in school to tell my teachers.
Yeah.
I'm really pumped to get back to let them know and so that they can be a part of this story, too.
Yeah. Something tells me your teachers probably know. I mean, this thing's already, from what I've been able to see, drawing sort of national attention to you, including a nice piece, I think, in People Magazine and a number of other publications and outlets. So it's kind of a cool bragging right. It's like, hey, I'm an AP English. Oh, yeah, I published a book. Try to top that one, my friend. So that's pretty good. But so I'm going to guess that most people listening, though, since it hasn't really been out all that long just yet, probably have not had a chance to read Peace Bunny Island. So many of the things that we'll discuss today are, of course, covered in the book, which I only mentioned so you don't end up thinking, does this guy have like zero reading comprehension skills? What's happening? These are all covered in the book. But partly I want to review some stuff for people who haven't read the book, and hopefully they'll be even more intrigued to read the book. So I'm not sure that all good stories start with a bunny, but yours definitely does. Take me back to the beginning. How did all this bunny business get started?
I started with a rabbit named Snickers, and our family is looking for a pet, and I talked about how my dad is not a pet person. So we're looking for one that our whole family would agree on. And we started with fish first and had a couple of those. But then we wanted to get a larger animal. So then we figured that a rabbit would be the next spot to look, and we wanted something that we can really snuggle with, and just started reaching out, and we looked on Craigslist for a rabbit that we could add into our family, and my mom had one as a kid, so she was kind of our rabbit expert in our house.
Yeah.
So then we just reached out and found this one particular rabbit that is a Dutch rabbit. His name was Snickers, and he was raised with cats, so he thought he was a cat, which was amazing for our family. So he was litter box trained and ran around the house and would come up to you and lick you like a cat would, and was just this perfect animal for our family.
Yeah, that's great, especially because, as you noted, your dad is not only not a pet person then, but as from what I can gather through the course of the book, has largely remained not a pet person, even though obviously there's been a lot of bunnies in and out of the house and throughout your life since then. The fact that Snickers kind of was cat-like, you kind of got, well, we got another kind of pet in here just because Snickers is so cat-like. Has your perspective on Snickers changed much, Caleb, over the years? He was the first one, and obviously an incredible thing has kind of unfolded, which we'll obviously touch on in a moment, but since then with rabbits. But looking back now, was there something more about Snickers that you kind of changed your view of him in those ensuing years?
Well, I had this really good relationship with Snickers. So then once he passed away, it was hard to find somebody else.
Yeah.
And knowing that you can't get your best friend. So like if you lose a relationship with a best friend, it's not like something can fill that spot. Nothing can be equivalent to it.
Yeah.
None of the rabbits in our program can fill the spot of Snickers, because they're all different.
Yeah, that's absolutely true and very wise. And one of the things I got wondering about, lots of people do have rabbits as pets, but back in the earliest days, why do you think you saw the situation differently? Why do you think you saw an opportunity, really, to do something more than just hang out with a bunny?
Well, it was when I was looking for after Snickers passed, looking for another rabbit to be in our family, and we got four of them off of Craigslist around the Easter time frame. And seeing that there were over 300 of them here in the Twin Cities that people were looking to sell on Craigslist, and just seeing that everybody has good expectations, but life happens. You have maybe you have scouts, or you have sports, and you have family things that you have to do. You go on vacation, and sometimes you just can't take care of the rabbit. So focusing a lot on the prevention side, a lot of people just didn't have the best expectations about rabbit. And so they had a good heart and they had good intentions, but they just didn't have really enough knowledge to go into it. So we focused on an educational program and focusing on the prevention side.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can prevent the pet abandonment cycle from there.
Sure. Well, I have another follow-up question or two, actually, just on that alone, but I want to let folks know who might just be tuning in. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you did just tune in, my guest is Caleb Smith, who is 16 years old and the author of a new memoir of sorts, Peace Bunny Island, The Extraordinary Journey of a Boy and His Comfort Rabbits, and How They're Teaching Us About Hope and Kindness. Before writing the book, Caleb had rented a farm, purchased a houseboat, and bought a 22-acre island. So if you'd like to ask Caleb a question about any of these things, including, of course, comfort rabbits, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So I'm part of that story that you just told me about going on to Craigslist. Let's just take a moment, because you've since become obviously a pretty significant expert about rabbits. Talk a little bit about at least from a rabbit's perspective, the nightmare that can be Easter. And sort of impulse buys and all kinds of, I think, well-meaning things that start off, and then something else happens after people have gone on their flurry of buying rabbits for Easter gifts.
Well, during it, you mentioned a lot of people would buy a rabbit on impulse around the Easter time frame, and a lot might get a baby bunny that after a while will grow, and which is a complete shocker for a lot of people, that as babies, they keep growing. And some people find out that they're allergic to it. So they could learn about rabbit, even going to interacting with a particular rabbit anywhere, where they could figure out that maybe they're allergic to it, or maybe this isn't a great fit for us. So we have a program called Bunny Boot Camp, which is just an hour class about some basic facts about rabbits and some rabbit anatomy and things like that, where then they can learn a little bit about it. And then people can figure out, first, are they a pet person? And second, are they a rabbit person? And then if they're into rabbits, is this particular rabbit perfect for our family rabbit person? So then we started a fostering program where people can check out a rabbit and see if it's a good fit before they go out and choose to buy one. And seeing that that we can offer these for short term, that they can kind of get their bunny fixed. And what we've seen is that a lot of people will have, our program is a few months long, and it's around 6 weeks is when if it's the kid's rabbit, then it starts becoming the adult's rabbit. So they're seeming to take care of it more, and that's when families either fall in love with it and they're going to be rabbit people, or maybe a rabbit wasn't particularly the best suited for their family, and then they would go with a different pet.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Bunny Boot Camp is such a great idea, and really, if you think about what often happens when people are, say, going to adopt a dog, they'll go to a shelter or somewhere and look at some dogs, meet some dogs sometimes, especially if there's a pet at home, but just generally, they spend time with that dog, and if there is a pet at home, they often use a little rendezvous arranged so that everybody can see how people get along. So even just that, I mean, which is pretty fundamental, I mean, avoids the things that, short of having Bunny Boot Camp with people otherwise just quickly getting rabbits and having no background, no framework, no idea about rabbits or how they feel about rabbits or anybody else in the family will feel about rabbits. So it is surprising how when it comes to rabbits, people just say, well, let's just grab this bunny, looks super cute, and we'll worry about the rest later. And that's often where disaster unfolds.
Yeah, so then, like you said, when you have a dog or a cat, you have to interact with it to see if it's good. And then rabbits, they just look at it and they kind of just say, I like that one. And then, like I said, a lot of people then might get them as babies. And some of them, like we got a call from somebody when we first got started about somebody that said that they got a baby and the rabbit kept growing and it kept growing and it kept growing. And we're like, what breed is it? They're like, it's a Flemish giant. Well, yeah, it's going to grow. It's going to be 20 to 25 pounds because it's a giant. And I think that with a little bit of research that we can focus on this prevention.
Yeah, although in this case, giant is right there in the name. So, I mean, there is a little bit of a tip off that the rabbit's probably going to get bigger than when they first met the rabbit. Caleb, I know we're kind of skipping around a little bit in the timeline, but maybe if you could describe the presentation you made to your parents after realizing there was indeed an opportunity to help rabbits, and you kind of had an idea, and you went to your parents and said, here's what I'm thinking.
So I put on my church suit and walked down the hallway like I was on Shark Tank and pitched an idea to my parents after seeing the rabbits on Craigslist, and once my heart broke, and just asking them, and I was talking about this idea that I had about how we can educate and then focus on the prevention side. And knowing that on Craigslist, we couldn't save all of them. The city we live in only allows 4 over the age of 6 months. So doing a lot of the education base, and that we could go to all these different events and people can interact with rabbits and learn like rabbit poop. So they're just things like that. And they're very energetic. So they're most likely not going to sit on your lap and watch a sports game with you. That they love to run around and be like bunnies. And just some quick bunny facts and going to all these different places, and so that people could make more donations so that we could increase our rabbit. Once we get a location for a farm, that we could increase our housing to then go to more events, spread more education, just expand it from there.
Right. Well, so just even to back up, so after you made this presentation, and of course, part of that story that I love is that you actually put on a suit to walk down the hall to kind of make this pitch to your parents. So I just think that's great. And like, even then, you already were aware of and a fan of Shark Tank. So it seems like kind of natural that you want to put your best foot forward even then. But so I guess by like 8 or 9, maybe you're running this operation that takes bunnies to like birthday parties, kids' birthday parties, and other events. But yeah, once again, and what's, I think, sort of a running theme of the Caleb Smith story, you had occasion to sort of reassess what you were doing with the birthday parties and other events, kind of look more broadly. What, at that point, what did you see? What did you decide?
Well, every event leads to another event, and things in motion stay in motion. And with our event, it started with, we did a church event for their outreach. And through that led to somebody asked, well, have you ever thought about doing a birthday party? And then that led to another birthday that led to 2 more. And then a family reached out and said, would you do a wedding reception? So then we started doing those events. And then during Easter, everybody wanted to see a rabbit. So then strategically planning which events we go to on during the Easter time frame and bringing the rabbits to different summer camps. And really, every event led to more events, and everything just expanded from there. And it was asking the question of, have you ever thought about doing this event? And that led to book club that wanted rabbits and corporate events and bachelorette parties. So everything just expanded and evolved.
But meanwhile, back then, as you noted earlier, at least residentially, you were only allowed to have four rabbits, as I understand it, living with you. So while there were more and more events and presumably more rabbits, it was kind of tricky to pull that off just because you could only have four at a time, at least in your home.
And so we recruited some other friends, and they were out throughout our fostering program. We would have our four at our location, and then we'd have them throughout. And then we made a location into one farm that we were there for the fall and into that next spring. And for the short term was such an amazing farm to house the rabbit and the numbers we had. So then we could have more than four at that moment before we shifted to another organic farm where we housed the rabbits later, and then going to the spot we're at now. It's just been a really fun journey. Just the expansion of the programs and the expansion of the business and seeing that there's a need.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, I guess one of the things, like I noted a moment ago, is that you kept kind of reevaluating the situation. I mean, sometimes, as you've said, you know, a birthday party would lead to a birthday party, would lead to some other kind of function, and those kind of just happen on their own. But as that was happening, or as those got to a certain point, you would take a step back, it seems like, and kind of reassess and just say, not only like, hey, how can we get to a position where we can have more than four bunnies that are just limited our house, but also like, how can we do other things to help people with these rabbits? So at a certain point, that included going to hospice wards, going to senior citizen facilities. So that was a whole other element, but beyond a kid at their birthday party hanging out with a bunny or two. So what do you think, was it just your early developed business sense, or what do you think kept prompting you to kind of reassess a situation and say, hey, we can do this, we could help more people here, we could do this if we broadened out there? What do you think was behind that?
I've always been more of a giver and more of a person that is one that wants to share and give and basically share the rabbits with these people that need them. And really, when it entered the rabbit world, was seeing the comfort dogs in action after the Sandy Hook tragedy and seeing this what I call the power of presence and how much an impact that these animals made over in this community, and seeing that, well, I have rabbits, and this seems like it would be a great connection, and seeing that, well, every event and every person that I have impact, then it's an impact that I'm making. And if I talk about that throughout the Bible, there's somebody that has their five loaves and two fishes, and how that affected. And it was just a little boy that handed it out, and it fed thousands. I also talk about the story of the starfish and how there were all these starfish washed up on the beach, and this kid was tossing them back in the ocean. And somebody asked, well, there's thousands of them here, and why are you throwing these back? And he said, because the 30 that I threw back, I made an impact for these 30. And knowing that I'm a kid on a mission, and everybody that I help, I'm making an impact with.
Yeah, that's right. And I just want to back up a little bit, just because we might have gone over a little bit too quickly for something that to me seems pivotal. First of all, what turns out to be a core storyline in the book is your parents' longstanding commitment to serving those who've experienced disaster and or tragic loss, and often traveling as part of a group of people with a similar commitment to the sites of mass shootings and other tragedies. So first of all, maybe you could just talk a little bit about what's behind that for your parents, and then we'll maybe move into briefly Sandy Hook, which you mentioned already just a moment ago.
Well, before I was born, both my parents went after 9/11 and working with the disaster relief there. And so I've learned a lot from them about that was one of the most impactful over, like, from a nation's view of how much that we've really done, and seeing that whenever as a young kid, learning from my parents and seeing that we would look on the news, and if there was a particular event like a natural disaster that affected an area, knowing that they were on they were on the aftermath side and seeing this firsthand, that just to keep them in mind and pray for them, knowing that they're going through difficult times. So then I've just learned from them about this empathy of knowing that they're feeling this.
Yeah. And it was being really with your parents on one such trip, which as it turns out was Sandy Hook, where some of the other measures to assist the people suffering the horrible emotional pain moved you and gave you kind of profound inspiration. And it was the comfort dogs from the Lutheran Church Charities Canine Comfort Dogs Ministry, right?
Yeah, and it was seeing the dogs there, and then, well, we were at the school, and then afterwards there's a bunny garden called The Pleasant, and it's in a park where they had rabbit statues and little houses for the kids to interact with, and it was focused on Peter Rabbit, and seeing how much of an impact it brought to me. And it was just a park filled with funny statues, and seeing that, well, if we had this with real rabbits, it would make even a huger impact. And that, I have rabbits, so then I made that connection.
Yeah, but that's the thing. The comfort dogs kind of inspired you, and there was this garden that was devoted kind of to rabbits, except it didn't have any rabbits. And you thought, once again, this is part of what I've been saying along the way here, is that you have obviously an unusual ability to kind of assess a situation and say, okay, here's how it can be improved. And a running theme also is that often that improvement can be rabbits. Here, if we provide rabbits here, this will make this all a much more comforting place than it already might be. And really, I think that it was kind of a revelatory moment there, seeing the comfort dogs and then saying, hey, this rabbits can really kind of accomplish the same thing, maybe even in a different way, because they are quiet. So let's talk about, in fact, what makes them comforting. But just let me mention again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is 16-year-old Caleb Smith, the author of a new book, Peace Bunny Island, The Extraordinary Journey of a Boy and His Comfort Rabbits and How They're Teaching Us About Hope and Kindness. Having published a memoir at 16 may not be the most distinctive thing about Caleb. For example, he bought a 22-acre island that serves as a sanctuary for his comfort rabbits, which we'll get into a little bit later. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or comment for Caleb by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So, Caleb, what makes a rabbit such an ideal animal to comfort people?
Well, I was saying that the rabbit, well, first, they're these animals, so that they're very similar to how a dog, that dogs and cats and other animals have this kind of therapeutic atmosphere to them anyway. And then the rabbits in particular, they're very quiet animals. And the nice thing is you can, in our program, we train them to sit in wagons and up in tables so that you can move them around very easily. And so like for when you go into a senior center, they're all in a circle sitting down, and we can bring the rabbit around where they could see and interact with them in the wagon as we go around the circle, and seeing that it's beneficial to both the humans that are receiving it, but then it's beneficial for the rabbits because they get to interact and play with people, and they can get loved on. And when we go to these different places, we like to say that we rescue the rabbits, and the rabbits rescued us back, and seeing that how much of an impact that these rabbits have made.
Yeah, so here's a question, because again, as you noted, a big part of this is that rabbits are quiet. But I was wondering, since I don't have anywhere near the breadth of knowledge about rabbits that you do, are there certain breeds that actually do make sounds?
So just rabbits in general don't really make any sounds.
Yeah.
I mean, you can usually hear them licking their water bottle. But maybe them chewing on some straw or things, but that's really the only noise that they make on a regular basis. And seeing that this helmet and the rabbits have these really big ears, so they're very good at listening to people. So people can, when they interact with them, they can tell their secrets to the rabbits, and they can go down and bend down low to the rabbits and just have a conversation with them. We have a program where we tried at some of the schools where the kids would read to the rabbit, and the rabbits seem to really enjoy, and they hop around and listen to the kids reading, and they can't really understand what the book is about, but it's this interaction that they're spending time with people.
Yeah, that's probably a great experience for both Rabbit and the kid reading that book to the rabbit. So, hey, Caleb, when we talk about comfort rabbits, what is their role like compared to, say, is there such thing as therapy rabbits that do something different than comfort rabbits, or really is your domain pretty much the comfort rabbits?
So we're focusing, we're more on the comfort side, but we also have kind of a therapy wing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the main differences is a comfort animal or an emotional support animal is used usually in a large group, or it can be one-on-one, but it's one where you're bringing an animal into a spot where you're either bring it to a senior center where they can interact and play with the rabbit, where they could be dealing with like isolation or something like that. But then as opposed to therapy, which is with a therapist and their specific goal, specific outcome goal that they're trying to achieve, and then the rabbits will then help achieve those outcomes.
I gotcha.
So a therapist or a emotional support or a is more just you bring the rabbits in because it's fun and people might just want to see a rabbit.
Their presence is meaningful, yeah.
Right.
I got you. So I'm going to get to some emails that have come in since we've been chatting here, but I just want to ask one more question before we do that. And you kind of alluded to this in a way earlier in our conversation. But what role does faith play in what you do?
It's really the foundation and the cornerstone off of what the business was formed off of, and having the same similar value system and knowing that they're not my rabbits, they're God's rabbits, and I just get to take care of them so that we need to share them to as many people as possible because they're not my rabbit.
Yeah, and that really does seem to have guided everything you've done and leading to this incredible story that still has obviously got much more to the story after what we've already addressed or what you were able to contain in the book, and we'll hopefully get to that if we don't run out of time. But here's at least some of our emails here. This one says, fantastic guest. I have two questions. What is the best way to keep rabbits safe from predators? And where do your rabbits live in winter?
So I'll tackle the island one first.
Yeah.
And so the rabbits live at the Peace Bunny Cottage all year round. That is the farm we're renting right now. And so the rabbits live there all year round, and then we'll go for short-term visits out to the island and throughout all of the different islands in our island chain. And knowing that our general idea for the rabbits on the island is that the rabbits go where the people are. So when the humans would enter an island, then the rabbits will go with us. But then once the humans leave the island, so the rabbits as well. And that's then to keep the rabbits safe. And what we've learned is that as these humans are keeping an eye on the rabbits, then like birds of prey and other predators would then stay away because the humans are always keeping an eye on them.
So nice.
Sometimes the rabbits might stay out for days if the rabbits or if the humans are camping out, so then we'll take them in for the night and put them on the houseboats, and then might have a few days where they'll be out to the island, so it could be more like a summer camp for them. But then when the humans leave the island, then the rabbits do as well.
I got you. And it sounds like in winter, they would end up at the cottage or elsewhere rather than try to still be out there in those kind of harsh temperatures.
Correct.
So here's another one. This one says, are his rabbits spayed and neutered?
So the rescues we have in our program are, and we've been focusing a lot on, I don't want to, if there's enough bunnies out in the world, so being very strategic that we don't breed the ones that we have in our program as rescues, and then some of the other breeds that there are just enough of.
Gotcha. And this one says, we love our house bunny. First of all, the subject line says, yay for Caleb, with a big exclamation mark, and then it says inside, we love our house bunny called Santino. He does bring us peace and serenity. Congrats to Caleb and his beautiful life's work. He's changing the world. Looking forward to reading this book. And she includes a picture of Santino, so that's great. So we kind of mentioned this a few times already, but I'm guessing people that are just now hearing about you might be really struck by this kind of detail that you bought an island for your rabbits. I mean, anybody actually buying an island for the rabbits would probably be kind of striking news. But you're doing so obviously as a teen was, of course, immensely distinctive. Why did you want an island for the rabbits?
Well, the idea came at 11 years old during the Easter time frame. and we just had all these different events, and really just out of fatigue, kind of just said, I want an island. And that's the original idea, and then started looking after the Easter time frame. It kind of struck me and was like, well, maybe an island makes sense. And so then I started looking for different islands and sort of reaching out to different island owners, and found one in particular that we ended up leasing for the summer. It's 22 acres. It's a very long island, 16 football fields long. And I had this idea of that we could train the rabbit on the island, and that the rabbits won't swim off, and the land predators won't get on, and the eagles will stay away if there are humans keeping an eye on the rabbit. So it's this perfect place where we could train them so that we could take them to all these different places and bring joy to people. So then we just wanted to test the model that summer. And then in the fall, the owner said, this might sound crazy, but do you want to buy it? So we started looking through all my contacts that I met throughout the years, going to these different entrepreneurship contests and entrepreneurship events. And I ended up finding this one in particular. So I have a mortgage on the island. Not very many 16-year-olds have a mortgage on an island.
No kidding. Yeah, most teenagers wouldn't understand mortgage, and then once they did understand it, they wouldn't want a mortgage. So that's impressive on a bunch of levels. How does that work, Caleb? I guess there's donations and things from the organization that then goes to paying off that mortgage?
Yeah, so then going to all these different events, like the birthday parties is one of our income streams. Then we have donations that come into our program, and we have lots of different micro businesses, the merchandise go into that, and then recently getting a book contract.
Yeah.
And this first year, all the royalties go back into the business, so 100% of that goes back into making it sustainable and paying for the care of the rabbit.
That's great. Gosh. Well, we're sort of nearing the end of our time here together, Caleb, but let me ask kind of a ridiculous question, I'm sure. But would there ever be a possibility, because when you say training, by the way, I just wanted to clarify that you don't mean like tricks or the rabbits somehow play basketball or whatever. You're just talking about training them so they're more effective and better as comfort rabbits, and when you take them to these various places, right?
Right. Yeah. So it's focusing on the training of putting them in the wagons and in tables.
Right.
And the nice thing about an island is that if they happen to hop down, they will hop around, eat the vegetation, but they're not really going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
So then we'll have a kissing nose, which means that we're going to feed them. So then they naturally kind of come back to us, and then we can put them up on a table or in a wagon again. And then after a while, they kind of get used to the feeling of what we do in our program. And then when they're at an event, we always bring a few extra rabbits, so that if a rabbit then says they've had enough for that day, that we can swap them out.
Right. Okay, gotcha. I just wanted to quickly clarify that. But what I was starting to ask, and again, noting that this might be kind of a ridiculous question, but would there ever be a possibility of training, like where we live, there's bunnies out at dusk, there's bunnies out in the early morning. Would there ever be a chance of training a wild bunny to become a comfort rabbit?
Most likely not.
Yeah.
We keep the wild rabbits outside and out in the wild because that's where they were made to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So let the wild bunnies be bunnies. I am a real sucker for bunnies of various kinds, and so I'm always puts me in a super good mood when I just see the bunnies out there munching away. So I just thought, well, maybe that's all that those bunnies need to do, because they're sort of my own little comfort bunnies just from a distance.
Right.
So that's great.
Yep.
Okay, Caleb, well, we have just about reached the end of the time. We've been speaking with Caleb Smith.